Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah in the middle of Samach Daled Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, Lo et habor ve lo et hadot. We've already quoted this Mishnah a number of times previously, but it's a continuation of the first Mishnah in the Perek that says when one sells a house, there are certain items that are not included. Those items that are not included here, the Mishnah continues, is Lo et habor ve lo et hadot. The cisterns that are contained within the house are not included in the sale. Afal pi shekatav lo umko beruma. Even if included in the contract, it says the depths and the height above the bor and the dot are not included. We saw an alternate reading of that yesterday, but the simplest reading of it is supportive of Rav Dimi's position, which is that when you write umko veruma in the contract, these items are still distinct and do not give you those rights to take the bor and the dot, but rather they are giving you the rights to the excavation rights below the property, as well as the air rights that are above, and possibly the gag as well, the use of the roof. In this instance, where the individual sold the house and maintained the rights to the bor and the dot, which is automatic because they were not included in the bill of sale, then the individual maintaining those rights, the seller over here who sold the house, now needs to find a way to get to his bor the dot. Again, the simplest reading of this, which the Gemara will challenge, is that Rabbi Akiva believes that the mocher is mocher ba'ayin yafeh, that when a person sells, he sells in the most generous manner, and therefore he sold everything, but did not retain any rights for himself. And in doing so, he retained the rights to the bor and the dot, which were not included in the sale, but he didn't give himself access to those items because he sold the house that surrounds them. And therefore now he needs to find a way to get there, whether that's purchasing it from the person who bought the house from him, or appeasing him some way in the contract to get access to it. On the other hand, the Chachamim believe that the seller over here of the house does not have to acquire for himself the right to access the bor v'dot. And again, in the simplest reading of this, the Chachamim believe that mocher ba'ayin ra'ah mocher, that the person who sells in the least generous manner, and therefore he maintained for himself the right of access to these areas. Umode Rabbi Akiva, bizman shamar lo chutz mi'elu. If in the contract he included this language, which says, in exception of these items, then, ein tzarich likach derech, he does not have to buy himself access to these properties. Once again, as the Rashbam notes for us, that this is extraneous language. By definition, the bor and dot would not have been included in the contract. So when you specify in the contract, chutz mi'elu, with the exception of these items that are already accepted from the contract, they wouldn't have been included anyway, then you've actually bought yourself something extra. But the inclusion of that extraneous terminology inside of the contract, that gains you extra rights that you wouldn't have had otherwise. So for Rabbi Akiva, that right is access to the bor v'dot that you wouldn't have otherwise had. For the Chachamim, it is, as the Rashbam says, Rabcha de Milta. There is nothing gained by that extraneous language. It's just better contractual language because not everybody is a bakir, an expert in this issue. And therefore, if you put it in there, it'll be clear that you have both those items that are residual in the contract, as well as the access rights to those items, the bor and the dot, even though that would have happened even if he didn't include this language. It's just for a clarification or a better understanding of the contract. But for the Rabbi Akiva, it has normative impact, which is that now when you say chutz mi'elo, you also gain yourself now access to these items, and you don't have to buy them separately. Machran le'acher. So this is a completely different case, a case where the individual sold the bor and the dot to someone else. He maintained the house, but he sold the rights to the cisterns to other parties. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Eino Tzarich Lekach Lo Derech. The buyer of the bor and the dot, the buyer of these cisterns, does not have to buy himself access to the bor and the dot, because again, on the simplest level, Rabbi Akiva is saying that mocher ba'ayin yafa mocher, the seller sells in the most generous manner, and therefore the seller here, who sold the bor and the dot to a third party, also granted him access to the bor and the dot. Chamim Amrim, Tzarich Lekach Lo Derech. On the other hand, the Chachamim believe that he has to buy for himself a access route to these items, because once again, the Chachamim believe mocher ba'ayin ra'ah mocher, and therefore he sold them in the most miserly fashion. And that means he sold them the items, but he didn't sell them access. You want access to those items, you'll have to purchase those separately. So that'll be the simplest understanding or explanation of the Mishnah, that Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim are arguing fundamentally as to what is the mindset of a seller? Does a seller sell in the most generous fashion? That would be the position of Rabbi Akiva. And therefore, where he sold the house, then he lost himself the rights or access to the bor and the dot because he gave away everything. On the other hand, when it comes to selling the bor and the dot, he'll sell access rights to that because when he sold it in a generous manner, whereby he sold both the bor and the dot and access to it. And the Chachamim will say just the opposite. The Chachamim will say that when you sell the house, then you maintain for yourself the rights of access to the bar and the dot. And when you sell the bar and the dot, that's all you sold. You didn't sell access rights. That person will have to purchase that separately to gain access to those items. Yativ Ravina, b'kekashele. Ravina was looking at our Mishnah and trying to understand, hainu bor, hainu dot. Bor and dot are the same thing. Now, obviously, they're not exactly the same thing, but what difference between them is significant enough to have them be enumerated separately in the Mishnah? They both are cisterns. They both serve the same purpose, and they still have a function in the same way. So if that's the case, if I knew one of them was not included in the sale, I would also know that the other was not included in the sale. So why do I need to have both of them mentioned in the Mishnah that they were excluded from the sale? Amale Rabba Tosva, the Ravina, Tashma, the Tanya. We have a bright, Echad Habor, Vechad Adot, Bekarka. Both a bor and a dot are cisterns that are submerged in the ground. Elisha Bor Bechafira. A bor is done through excavating. Vadot Bibinyan. And the dot is done through building. The difference being what type of ground that you place the cistern into. They're both below ground water capture mechanisms, but certain water capture mechanisms or ground will facilitate the capture of water. For instance, if you excavate, you chisel into bedrock, the bedrock is suited to capturing of water. You don't need to build anything. The bedrock itself has the ability to capture water. You may have to plaster it with lime to make it waterproof, but by itself, it already has structural integrity. On the other hand, if you're digging a cistern or a water capture mechanism into, whether it's sand, into earth, anything that is not structurally sound when you dig into it and not waterproof by definition, there you're going to build it out. Meaning that internally, when you dig down or excavate into the ground, you're going to have to put bricks or build some sort of structure around it and then waterproof it. So that'll be binyan. Yota v'vashi v'kakashule, hainu bor, hainu dot. A repetition of the same question. There was Ravina, over here it is Ravashi. Amalei Mark Shisha, Breder of Chista, the Ravashi. And again, a similar answer, Tashma, Detanya, we have a bright, Echad Abor, Vechad Adot Bekarka. They both are submerged in the ground. Elisha Abor Bechafira, Vadot Bebinyat. The Bor is done through simply excavating, and the Dot is done through structurally building out that which is below. Now the Rashbam goes out his way to show that there is a Tzrichuta now. There's a necessity based on this to mention both of these items in the Mishnah. Because had it been that you only mentioned one, it would not be an automatic outcome that the other would have been excluded. And that is, you would have thought, for the same reason, that maybe a dot, that is a binyan, is either more similar to a house, just like the house requires a binyan, so does the dot, and therefore it's similar to the house. Or the other possibility, which is the fact that the dot required a separate binyan, makes it chashiv, makes it unique and distinct, and therefore it would be separate from the house. And now you have a tzrichuta, which is if the Mishnah only mentioned bor was excluded from the sale, you would say a bor is excluded from the sale because it both has a different utility than the house, as well as the fact that it's built differently. It's excavated into the ground. It's not built like a house. And that's why it's excluded. But a dot that has one aspect that is similar to the house, it may not have the same utility, but it's built and man-made just like the house. So maybe that would be included in the sale and vice versa. If the Mishnah only mentioned dot to be excluded, then you would have thought that the reason that dot is excluded is because it's a building of significance. You had to not only excavate, but you also had to build it out structurally. Therefore, it's distinct on its own because of the amount of effort that you put into it. But a bor, where you're simply excavating, and then it works, maybe over there, that would be included in the sale of a house. And that's why the Mishnah needed to mention both the bor and the dot to tell us that they're both excluded from the sale because they don't serve the same utility as the house. They are not for the living or living space of the house. They are for the water that is contained inside of them or the possibility of storing items in those areas. So their utility is different, as well as the fact that they are below the ground. They're not in the same location or placement as the house itself. Although you could explain the difference between them based on the Tosfot back on Samach Gimel Amud Bet, who try to explain the position of the Rashbam over there, suggest that maybe there were cisterns that were below ground and cisterns above ground, meaning that there were cisterns below the karka, the ground level of the house, and there were cisterns or water collection basins also on the roof. And then the difference between bor and dot would be bor would be submerged below ground, whereas the dot would be above ground, meaning on the roof, a building as part of the structure of the house above. And then obviously the tzrichuta between them would be more understandable because they are really distinct. The bor is below the karka of the ground, whereas the dot is up above on the roof. So the dot is a part and parcel of the house and the building of the house. On the other hand, the dot might be more significant because it's built into the structure of the house, whereas the bor is just dug into the karka, the ground of the house. Now the Gemara discusses this machloka between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim, and it proposes up front the simplest explanation of their machloka, then would have ramifications beyond this Mishnah itself. Let us assume that the machloka between them is the following. Rabbi Akiva savar mocher ba'ein yafa mocher. Rabbi Akiva believes that the seller sells in the most generous manner, as we already explained in the Mishnah. Rabbanan savre mocher ba'ein ra'a mocher. And Chachamim, on the other hand, disagree and say that the seller sells in the most miserly fashion. Uga da'amar nami ba'alma. And then, when we say throughout Shas, and we are attributing the position of mocher ba'ein yafa to Rabbi Akiva, and mocher ba'ein ra'a to the Chachamim, that will be extrapolated from here. So that's when we say Ba'almar Bikiva Latameh, Damar Mocher Bain Yafa Mocher, Mehocha. It comes from here. This is the source for the fact that the Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva argue on this point. And this is the Nikudata Machloket between them in this Mishnah. And from this Mishnah, we extrapolate to other cases in Shas to explain the position of Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, the Shitatam, that Rabbi Akiva always believes Mocher Bain Yafa Mocher, and the Chachamim believe Mocher Bain Ra'a Mocher. That is the proposition of the Gemara. It's the simplest reading of the Mishnah. Now the Gemara is going to challenge that understanding and eventually get back to the understanding that that is their machloket, but proposes alternatives in the interim, which is, Mimai, how do you know that that's their machloket? Dilma, Rabbi Akiva Savar, Ein Adam Rotzeh Sheitein Ma'utav, Vijusu Acherim. People don't want to pay money and then have other people walking through and broaching their privacy, abrogating their privacy of their home. Rabbanan Savrei, En Adam Rotzeh, Shito Ma'ot, V'Yifrach Ba'avir. And Chachamim believe that an individual doesn't want to put his money out and have to fly in the air to get to his location. Or in essence, they're arguing about the mindset of the individuals during the sale. When it comes to the sale, the buyer, when he buys the house is a private location, it's a private place. They don't want people traversing through their house, making it into a thoroughfare. And therefore, when they buy the house, their intent to buy the house is to buy the house with the full rights of privacy. That means that you don't have access to your bor and dot that are contained within the house, even though they're below the ground, but the access to them is through the house. The buyer puts his money down, assuming that he's going to get that privacy with the house. As the Rashbam explains, obviously there's the mocher, the seller here as well, and the seller doesn't want to give up those rights. But what the Rashbam says is that the seller understands the mindset of the lokeach. And he knows that the lokeach is going to insist on that privacy. And given that he's going to insist on that privacy, the mocher has to then stipulate otherwise in the contract, because if he doesn't, he will lose that right. So the mocher, knowing that the buyer wants that privacy, has to include in the contract his residual ownership to gain access, because if not, that's going to govern the contract over here. Whereas the chachamim believe that the seller over here doesn't sell his property and then have to fly through the air to get to the residual assets that he kept. He knows he needs access to the bor vedot, and that's what it governs over here. And if the buyer wanted to maintain privacy, he had to include that in the contract. He would have to say that despite the fact that your bor vedot are inside, I'm not giving you access rights. If he doesn't stipulate that, then they do get those access rights. Vela Misefa, wait a minute. What are you going to do with the latter half of the Mishnah then? Machran le'acher. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Einu Tzarich L'kach Lo Derech. V'chamim Omerim, Tzarich L'kach Lo Derech. Rabbi Kiva says in the latter half of the Mishnah that if he sells it to a third party, then you don't have to buy access rights. He grants them access rights. On the other hand, the Chachamim say that he does have to buy access rights. Now, based on the logic of the assumption of what the machloket is now, that shouldn't have been the outcome. If we always consider the buyer's privacy or the privacy of the house to be paramount, then it should work in both directions for Rabbi Akiva. That means when you sell the house and maintain the rights of the bor vedot, you don't get access to it. But vice versa, where you sell the bor vedot and you maintain rights to the house, then you should have also been able to block access to this individual, because the privacy of the house is paramount. And therefore, when you sold the bor vedot, you didn't sell it with a pathway or an ability to traverse the house to breach your privacy in the house. That means that you should not have been entitled to a thoroughfare through there. And vice versa for the Chachamim. If the seller always gets himself rights to access, then the person who buys an asset or retains an asset always wants access to that asset, then in the ratio where he's selling the house and maintaining the bor vedot, he should gain access. But vice versa, in the seifa where he's selling the bor vedot, then obviously he must have sold access. People don't pay money not to access their assets. And therefore, this explanation doesn't flow through the Mishnah. And now, if you look in the Girsa of the Bach, he says, Elalav b'hakam iflegate. This must be the machloki between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. Rabbi Kiva savar, mocher ba'ain yafa mocher. Rabbanan tzavi, mocher ba'ain ra'a mocher. Because if you do that, you can explain both the Reisha and the Seif of the Mishnah, unlike the explanation that you gave now. The Gemara says, Dilma, how do you know that's true? Maybe they have a different view of the machloket. Rabbi Akiva Savar, Batar Daita Loke Achazlina, we go after the buyer's intent. Rabbanan Savar, Batar Daita Mocher Azlina, we go after the seller's intent, which is, as the Rashbam explains, the Baal Tosafot say the same thing. When we have competing interests over here, where both parties have a reason to withhold or grant access, then who do we favor in that case? When we have a showdown between the Mocher and the Lokeach, both of them have a valid claim over here in terms of their rights, whose rights take precedence? And we're going to say that Rabbi Kiva says that the Lokeach, the buyer's rights, take precedence, and the Chachamim are going to say that the Mocher's rights take precedence. And as the Rashbam explains over here, this will not be necessarily extrapolable to every case. It will only be in cases where you have those rights in conflict, where you have a buyer's right and a seller's rights in conflict. Then the determining factor will be, according to Bikiva, the Lokeach, the buyer, whereas for the Chachamim, it will be the Mocher. But in situations where either there is no offsetting rights, or one party has a claim for rights and the other does not, over there we would not apply that the Lokeach always wins, or the Mocher always wins, but rather we will look at what are the issues at hand. If there are no issues, then maybe everybody believes Mocher Bayin Yafe Mocher, or Mocher Bayin Ra'a Mocher. We don't know what they hold, but maybe they can hold either way. Or, in the case where only one of them has a claim for rights, then we would favor that party because there's no competing interest. In our situation, you have competing interests over here. You have the individual who is buying the Bor Vidot or maintaining the Bor Vidot, that he wants access to that place. In addition, you have the person who's buying the house or retaining the house, he wants privacy in his house. So here you have competing interests. When you have those competing interests, who do we favor? Rabbi Kiva says we favor the buyer. And that means in the case where the individual is purchasing the house, we will favor his right to make a claim that he wants privacy and he didn't sell access through there and you're going to have to buy that access. In the situation where he bought the Bor Vidot and over there the claim is that he needs access to that, he wouldn't have bought it without access to it, then again we will favor the buyer even though there's an offsetting interest of the seller that says he wants privacy in his house. So it's not the particular claim, it's the fact that both parties have a claim. Rekiv and the Chachamim agree that both of these are valid claims. It's a valid claim for privacy. It's a valid claim for access. Those are offsetting claims. How do we determine who trumps in that situation? The answer is, according to Rabbi Kiva, the buyer trumps. And according to the Chachamim, the Mocher trumps. But as I mentioned before, the Rashbam says, but in situations, for instance, where he sells trees, and the question is, do the trees come with land or they don't come with land? Over there, maybe Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim both agree. Neither of them have claims over there. The only question at hand is, do we say Mocher Ba'ain Yibra'a Mocher or Mocher Ba'ain Yafai Rocher? Maybe Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim would agree in that situation as to which of those would be true. But our case would not be extrapolable to other cases. It's unique to this situation where you have offsetting claims. So Gemara accepts this suggestion as the explanation for our Mishnah. But then it says, Vela Maha. Let's look at a Mishnah further on Daf Ayin Aleph, which is similar to the first two Mishnayot that we saw in our parak so far with regards to the Bayit, with regards to the house. But the upcoming Mishnayot deal with the Sadeh, which is when a person sells a field, what is included in that sale and what is precluded from that sale. So the Mishnah that we're quoting now is what's precluded from that sale. It says, Velo et bor, velo et gat, a bor, a cistern, or a press, velo et shovach, or the dovecotes, ben charivim, ben yeshuvim, whether they are still in function and working, or whether they are, quote-unquote, destroyed, means that they're not in use. Those are not included in the sale. But tzarich likach lo derech, divrei Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva once again says that if you sell the field, and by definition these items are residual to you, you retain the rights to them. Rabbi Kiva says when you retain the rights to them, you got to buy access to them, because when you sold the field, you sold all access rights as well. Chamim amim, eino tzarich. Chamim say no. When you sold it, you maintain the access rights to those items, and you can traverse the field to get to your assets that remain. Hatu lomali. Why do I need that case by the sadeh as well? The way you've explained it now, that it has to do with favoring the Mocher or the Lokeach, where they have offsetting claims, then I already have that understanding of the Machloket Rabbanan and Rabbi Akiva from our Mishnah over here. Why does the Mishnah further on in the parak need to repeat the same thing again? Elalav hakamash malan. That extra Mishnah is coming to teach us to rekiva savar mocher ba'ain yafa mocher, rabbanan savar mocher ba'ain ra'ah mocher. Meaning that the upcoming Mishnah comes to show you that their machloket persists even outside of situations where it's a question of lokeach and mocher and offsetting rights. It's a general thematic machloket, which is, does the seller sell in the most generous fashion, or does he sell in a more miserly fashion? He says, wait, maybe the reason that the upcoming Mishnayot have to repeat the machloket between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim is because one deals with the house and one deals with the sadeh. And there would be a difference of opinion between the bayit and the sadeh, whether to favor the lokeach or to favor the mocher. Betzricha, because you need both of them, because I can explain there's a difference between them. Diashmein and bayit. If you're only talking about the case of the bayit, mishum de bayit's niuta. Because over there, privacy in the house is of paramount importance. Given that it's of paramount importance, that's a serious consideration here in the machloket when we deal with the case of the bayit. Aval sadeh, had you not written down the sadeh, emalo. Maybe Rabbi Kiva over there would agree that the bigger consideration, or the only consideration, is that he doesn't have to fly in the air to get to his assets. Remember, the offsetting issues are, number one, privacy. Number two is the access to the assets. So over there we said these are offsetting claims. Rabbi Kiva believes we're going to favor the lokeach when they have offsetting claims. And the Chachamim believe we're going to favor the mocher when we have offsetting claims. So now Rabbi Kiva says that babayit, who says that he's going to say the same thing by a sadeh? Maybe by the bayit, he favors the buyer over there, because the buyer's claim is on par or on footing with this seller's claim. The buyer says, I want privacy in my house. The seller says, I want to have access to my assets. So given that we have offsetting claims, Rabbi Kiva says, the lokeach trumps. But when it comes to a sadeh field, there the claim for privacy is meaningless. There is no need for privacy in the fields. And therefore, the only claim that we would consider is the mocher's claim. And maybe Rabbi Akiva would agree to the position of the Chachamim. V'yeshmein and sadeh. If you only told me about the machlok between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim in the field, mishum dekashu le'davsho. Over there, the reason that the buyer wants to have the sadeh, have nobody traverse it, is because the walking of people over the field ruins the field. It ruins the plowing of the field, ruins the aeration of the field, ruins the saplings or the seeds that are in the ground or things that are growing in the ground. Walking across the field is detrimental to the field. So maybe that's the reason over there that Rabbi Akiva says that they have a claim on par. They have a lokeach saying, listen, I don't want you traversing my field because it's going to ruin the field. The other party says, I want access to my assets. There you have an equal footing, and we'll say, we'll favor the lokeach. Aval babayit, when it comes to the house, emalo. There, walking through the house itself is not the problem. It's the breach of privacy that's the problem, but the walking itself doesn't cause physical damage to the house. So maybe there, Rabbi Akiva would agree that that's not a sufficient claim, and we would favor the mocher over there. And the same is true for the Chachamim. You could do the same thing in reverse for the Chachamim, which is that the Chachamim believe by the house where there is no davsho, maybe over there, that's where they favor the mocher, because the lokeach doesn't have a strong tam. But in the field where the lokeach has the right to declare about davsho, maybe over there they would agree that the lokeach trumps like Rabbi Akiva and not the mocher. And the other way around, if you told me about sadeh, maybe there I would say the Chachamim say that davsha is not a sufficient reason to favor the lokeach, but b'tzniyuta, by the bayit, maybe that's a sufficient reason to favor the lokeach. Either way you look at it, bayit and sadeh are different enough that I would have to spell it out in both cases that the Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva maintain their positions. That Rabbi Akiva always believes we favor the lokeach, and the Chachamim believe we always favor the mocher, whether it's in the bayit or whether it is in the sadeh. Gemara says, elami seifa. What about the latter half of the Mishnah later on, which speaks about the sadeh, which is machran acher? If he sold these items, these assets in the field that are not normally included with the sadeh, he sold them to a third party, over there then the seller maintains the rights to the field. Rabbi Akiva omer, enu tzarich lekach lo derech. The person who sold the assets to does not have to buy himself access. Chumim armim, tzarich, hatu lomali. Why do I need a fourth case? Hainu hach. It is the exact same thing. So remember that both in the case of the house and in the sadeh, we have two sections to the Mishnah. There's a section in the Mishnah that says that where he sold the house, and then what assets do not go along with the sale. And then the next part of the Mishnah is he sold the assets, then what rights does that individual have vis-a-vis the bayit? In the sadeh, we also have two sections. The first one is when he sold the sadeh, what happens to those assets that are excluded? And then the latter half of that Mishnah is a case where, if you sold the assets, what is his rights vis-a-vis the field? So now, you have four sections over here. You would only need three of them to come to the conclusion that we had, which was, we need the Reisha and the Seifa over here by Bayit to teach us that the machlok between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim is about whether we favor the Lokeach or we favor the Mocher. You need the first section of the Sadeh to teach you that not only is this true by Bayit, but it's also true by Sadeh. And then you could extrapolate that it would work either way by the Sadeh, just like it works either way by the Bayit. The fact that now you bring a fourth section to the Mishnah, which tells you about the inverse case by the Sadeh, that's completely unnecessary. As the Rashbam points out, you could have done that on your own. You don't need us to spell it out, because once you know that Sadeh and Bayit have the same din, then you could say the same thing in reverse. The fact that now you brought us an additional section to the Mishnah to teach us this machloket between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim again, that seems unnecessary. Elalav hakamash v'lon. That section comes to teach you that this machloket between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim is not about favoring the Mocher or the Lokeach. Ela, the Rabbi Kiva savar Mocher ba'ayin yafa Mocher. The Rabbi Kiva believes that the seller always sells in the most generous manner. Rabbanan savi Mocher ba'ayin ra'a Mocher. And that the Chachamim believe the seller always sells in the most miserly fashion. Shmamina, that is the core essence of their machloket. And once we know that, we can reapply it to all the cases that we had spoken about till now, the simplest reading of the Mishnah. The Gemara had speculated about another reason for their machloket, but it became apparent by the fact that the Mishnah keeps repeating this machloket between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim, that it must be coming to teach us something beyond these narrow machlokot that exist in these cases, which is that we would favor the Mocher, favor the Lokeach. That's too narrow a scope. It must be that their machloket is much more global than that. And that's what the Mishnah is coming to indicate to us by giving us so many cases where Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim argue to show us that that is a global understanding of their positions, which is that Rabbi Kiva believes Mocher ba'ayin yafa Mocher. Chachamim believe that Mocher ba'ayin ra'a Mocher. The Rashbam points out that don't say that the reason that the Mishnah by Sadeh put in that Seifa piece is to teach you that the Chachamim consider this issue of trampling on the Sadeh to be a significant issue. Because in the ratio over there of Sadeh, they're only teaching you that when somebody sells an asset, they don't sell all the rights because they're not going to fly over to their asset. That's a issue that we already saw by Bayit, but it's not something we saw by Sadeh. So that would help us by Sadeh to know that they have that opinion there as well. But we don't know about the Chachamim is the fact that by Sadeh, that they allow for this Tana, this claim that trampling on the Sadeh is problematic. And that's what the Seifa of that Mishnah would have taught us, is that they consider that to be a significant claim as well. The Rashbam says, don't say that, because there is no difference between the Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim here agree to all the claims that are being made. Their only question between them is, do we favor the Mocher, or do we favor the Lokeach? And given that, if Rabbi Akiva already accepts the claim of Davsha, trampling the field to be detrimental, then the Chachamim also agree to that claim. Their machloket is not about the rights or the claims of the individuals. It's what do you do when you have those offsetting claims. And therefore, since Rabbi Akiva and the ratio of the Sadeh Mishnah already tells you that Davsha is a valid claim, the Chachamim are going to agree that's also a valid claim. And the issue is, do we favor the Lokeach or Mocher? And therefore, it makes that last piece, or the second half of the Sadeh Mishnah, unnecessary. Given that it's unnecessary, it must be teaching us something more than the narrow machloket of whether we favor the Lokeach or Mocher in these offsetting claims, but rather it's a deeper understanding of the machloket between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, as to whether we say Mocher ba'ayin ra'a Mocher, or Mocher ba'ayin yafa Mocher. Itmar, Ravuna amar Rav, Alocha k'divrei Chachamim. Ravuna says in the name of Rav that the Alocha is like the Chachamim, that we say Mocher ba'ayin ra'a Mocher. Rav Yirmiyah ba'aba amar Shmuel, in the name of Shmuel, says Alocha k'Rabbi Akiva, that we say that Mocher ba'ayin yafa Mocher. So here you have a machloket between Rav and Shmuel, in essence, which the Gemara will deal with in tomorrow's daf. The Rav thinks that the Chachamim are correct, that Mocher sells in the most miserly fashion. And Shmuel believes that Rabbi Akiva is right, that the seller sells in the most generous fashion. Amalei Rav Yirmiyah ba'aba Rav Huna. Rav Yirmiyah Abba, who's a Talmud of Rav, says the Rav Huna is also a Talmud of Rav. Vazimnin sagin amrita kamei de Rav. Many times I said in front of Rav, Hilchotok Rabbi Akiva, v'omar li v'lo mide. I said the loch is like Rabbi Akiva, that a mocher is mocher ba'ayin yafa. And Rav never stopped me from saying that. So that seems to imply that Rav believes that the Locha is like Rabbi Akiva and not like the Chachamim. Amarlei, hechi tenita. What was the nature of the Mishnah that you spoke before him? Amarlei, ipcha tanina. We have it just reversed. Shumhachi lo amar lecha v'lo midei. That's why he didn't say anything to you. Now it's obvious here that Rabbi Yirmiyah ba'aba did not respond to Rav Huna in that manner. Because if he knew that his Mishnah, or the Mishnah that he was Goreis, had Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim's positions reversed, then obviously he would have known why Rav didn't say anything. Rav didn't say anything because him passing like Rabbi Akiva was the equivalent of passing like the Chachamim in the Mishnah that we have here. But what the Gemara is interjecting, and that's what the Rashbam says, is that the Gemara continues the conversation as if it happened, but it's really the Gemara saying this. The reason why Rabbi Yirmi Abba never got any objection from Rav is because Rabbi Yirmi Abba was looking at a breita of Rabbi Chia, in all likelihood, that had the positions reversed. Unlike our Mishnah that has Rabbi Akiva saying Mocher Ba'ain Yafa, and the Chachamim saying Ba'ain Ra'ah, Rabbi Chia's breita had it reversed. That Rabbi Akiva says Ayin Ra'ah, and the Chachamim say Ayin Yafa. So therefore, when Rabbi Yirmi Abba said in front of Rav, well, the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, he was saying the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva ba'ayin ra'ah, which is the equivalent to saying the halacha is like the Chachamim in our case, which is ba'ayin ra'ah, and that's why Rav did not object to the position of Rabbi Abba, but that is consistent with Rav's position that he paskins like the Chachamim. Okay, we're going to stop here, 7 lines down on the top of Samachei Amud Aleph.